It was on a still evening in June that Laura Montreville left her father's cottage in the little town of Glen Albert to begin a solitary ramble. Her countenance was mournful and her step languid, for her health had suffered from long confinement and her spirits were exhausted by long attendance on the deathbed of her mother. But Laura had in her that which softens all difficulty and beguiles all fatigue, an active mind, a strong sense of duty, and the habit of meeting and of overcoming adverse circumstances.
I'm Katie Ailes, and you're listening to Building Stories, a new podcast from Edinburgh City of Literature and Historic Environment Scotland. This series celebrates five female writers who lived at various points in their lives in Edinburgh and vitally contributed to literary culture across Scotland, the UK, and the world. The important work of these women has gone under-recognized, so in this podcast, we shine a light on their achievements. All of the authors featured in these podcasts were nominated to be recognised by Historic Environment Scotland's commemorative plaque scheme. Plaques for Rebecca West, Mary Brunton, and Christian Isabel Johnston were installed in spring 2022. In this episode, we celebrate Mary Brunton, a highly acclaimed novelist of the early 1800s whose career rivaled Jane Austen's, and whose life was cut similarly, tragically, short. At the start of this episode, you heard the opening lines from her first novel, Self Control, which was a bestseller launching her into the literary limelight. Mary Balfour was born in 1778 to Thomas and Frances Balfour and grew up on Bury in the Orkney Islands. She was the eldest of three and the only girl. While her younger brothers were tutored at home by the handsome young trainee minister Alexander Brunton, more on him soon, Mary was sent to school in Edinburgh from ages 9 to 16. There, she developed her relationship with the city that would become her home for most of her adult life. In her second novel, Discipline, the protagonist describes arriving in Edinburgh and seeing Northbridge for the first time. In this passage, we can perhaps feel some of Mary's own amazement when she first stepped foot in Scotland's capital city.
We passed the singular bridge which delighted me with the strangely varied prospect of antique grandeur and modern regularity, of a city cleft into a noble vista towards naked rock and cultivated plain, seas busy with commerce and mountains that sheltered distant solitudes. I could scarcely be dragged away from this interesting spot.
As Mary grew up, she developed a friendship with a dashing young clergyman who had tutored her brothers, Alexander Brunton, now ordained as a minister and working in East Lothian. Her mother noticed this budding relationship and was appalled. Alexander was the son of a shoemaker, a local minister on a meager stipend with no social connections. Determined that her daughter was destined for a match with a gentleman from high society, Frances Balfour summoned her daughter back to Orkney as soon as Mary had finished her schooling. However, this plan to keep the pair apart backfired when Alexander visited Orkney in 1798 as a traveling preacher. Mary's mother resorted to extreme measures. In a plot twist straight out of Rapunzel's mother's playbook, Frances Balfour exiled her daughter to the barely inhabited island of Gersay in Orkney. It was stormy and desolate, 2.5 kilometers off the mainland and only accessible by boat. The 19-year-old Mary was utterly isolated and heartbroken. But sometimes fairy tales have happy endings. One dark night in late autumn, Alexander Brunton secretly cast off from the mainland in a small boat. He rowed alone to the island, reunited with Mary, and rescued her from her exile. They made their way to Edinburgh, and on the 4th of December, 1798, Alexander and Mary Brunton were married. It's worth noting that this outlandish story of the boat elopement has been contested by some historians, and details aren't clear. Mary Brunton's biographers, myself included, have used a bit of creative license. Over two centuries later, we may never know the truth, but the image of Alexander rowing through choppy waves to save his distressed damsel, well, it could certainly be an excellent foundation for the dramatic flights of fancy Mary was to write a decade later in her novels. And whatever their flighty, passionate beginnings might suggest, the marriage was rock solid. Mary and Alexander were together until her death. The newlyweds returned to Alexander's parish in Bolton, East Lothian, and for 5 years they lived there, enjoying the calm of the countryside. In 1803, though, Alexander took up an illustrious post at Greyfriars Kirk, and the couple moved to the bustling capital city. They initially lived on St. John Street, just off the Royal Mile, and later moved to 35 Albany Street in Newtown. Mary, now in her mid-20s, was back in the city she'd lived in as a teenager, no longer a student, but now a prominent minister's wife. Her writings reflect back a woman brimming with curiosity, intelligence, and creativity, regardless of her circumstances.
I believe nobody was ever better formed for enjoying life than I, saving and accepting the construction of an abominable stomach, for I delight in travelling, yet can be happy at home. I enjoy company, yet I prefer retirement. I can look with rapture on the glorious features of nature, the dark lake and the rugged mountains, the roaring cataract, yet can gaze with no small pleasure on the contents of a haberdasher's window.
So, what was this bright young woman to do in the busy capital city? Mary's husband Alexander was highly intellectual as well as theological, with expertise in ancient and modern languages. Eventually, he became professor of Oriental languages at the University of Edinburgh. In stark contrast to what we might expect from a learned husband of that era, Alexander actively encouraged Mary to follow her mind's desires as well, and the couple spent many evenings together reading. Mary developed a keen interest in philosophy and ancient languages, in addition to her substantial religious knowledge. And later in her life, she also began learning Gaelic. And as Mary Brunton read, she also began to write. The poetry she'd penned as a teenager soon gave way to a focus on longer fiction, and in her early 30s, she began plotting her first novel. Mary wrote the majority of this novel in secret. Even though Alexander had been very supportive of her intellectual pursuits, she was self-conscious about her creative hobby, as she thought of it, and didn't show him the novel until it was nearly finished. Even when Mary presented the novel for publication, she did so anonymously, in part to protect Alexander from any negative blowback that might hurt his moral authority as a religious leader, but also due to well-grounded concerns about the treatment of female writers at the time. Prior to publication, she described her fears.
To be pointed at, to be noticed and commented upon, to be suspected of literary airs, to be shunned as literary women are by the more unpretending of my own sex, and abhorred as literary women are by the more pretending of the other, I would sooner exhibit as a rope dancer.
In 1811, Mary Brunton anonymously published her first novel, Self Control, and was deeply relieved when the blowback she'd feared didn't come. It was an instant hit, going through 4 editions in its first year of publication alone. The novel was even selected to be included in Richard Bentley's illustrious canon-forming standard novel series in 1831, selected before Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility, which was published in the same year. The plot of Self-Control traces the development of its protagonist, Laura Montreville, from a naive girl into a self-sufficient young woman. After growing up poor but happy in a remote Highlands village, her idyllic life is jolted by the cruelty of Captain Harville, a rake who tries to seduce her. Laura takes it upon herself to reform him, agreeing to marry him if he can convert to a good, wholesome life within 2 years. But her faith in him is sadly misplaced. Eventually, through hardship and worldwide travels, including a wild adventure in America, including canoes and waterfalls, Laura realizes that the bad boy isn't worth her love and that she has to rely on herself. The book was wildly popular, and it even reached the desk of the 19th century writer we remember best today, Jane Austen. As a direct contemporary of Mary Brunton, Jane Austen was familiar with her work and infamously had a mixed opinion of self-control.
I am looking over self-control again, and my opinion is confirmed of its being an excellently meant, elegantly written work without anything of nature or probability in it. I declare I do not know whether Laura's passage down the American River is not the most natural, possible, everyday thing she ever does.
Unrealistic river adventures aside, buoyed by the success of self-control, 4 years later, Mary published her second novel, Discipline. Again, she published anonymously. Discipline was advertised as being written by the author of self-control. In Discipline, Mary used similar characters and themes to the ones that had earned her such success previously. The novel features a female protagonist, Ellen Percy, who undergoes radical character development to become independent and self-reliant. At the start of the novel, Ellen is a beautiful, rich, spoiled, proud girl who takes advantage of others' kindness to mistreat them, very similar to Jane Austen's Emma of the eponymous novel, which would be published the year after Discipline. However, Ellen suddenly loses her wealth, family, and social status, and is forced to reform her manners through hard work and finding faith. While self-control and discipline might not seem like liberatory feminist texts to today's readers, the way in which both novels depicted romance and female self-reliance were gently revolutionary in their time. Many courtship novels of the early 1800s, and still today, paint sentimental, sweeping romances, which were sensational and totally unrealistic. But Mary Brunton's novels depicted courtship more bluntly. The heroines of both self-control and discipline have to escape the advances of predatory men out to seduce them with less than gentlemanly intent. These novels depict the dangers of getting giddily swept up in romance, a somewhat ironic moral, given that Mary Brunton's own whirlwind elopement blossomed into a stable, supportive marriage. These are novels which prioritize sense over sentimentalism, labor over laziness. Both protagonists, Laura and Ellen, learn the hard way to be self-reliant, to find freedom and independence through hard work. In this way, Brunton's fiction normalized the idea of the self-sufficient woman. And in the early 1800s, this was a refreshing change. Rather than a handsome, rich husband sweeping in to save the day, here are heroines that dodge the bullets of unreliable men and instead save themselves. For Mary Brunton, novel writing was not solely a form of creative expression, but also a vehicle for religious evangelism. Her fiction extolled the virtues of faith and showed characters finding strength and reforming their lives through doing penance for their sins. Brunton's dedication to self-control lays out her moral agenda for her fiction.
In the character of Laura Montreville, the religious principle is exhibited as rejecting the bribes of ambition, bestowing fortitude in want and sorrow, as restraining just displeasure, overcoming constitutional timidity, conquering misplaced affection, and triumphing over the fear of death and of disgrace.
For her third novel, Emmeline, Brunton embarked on a darker, more morally complex narrative. Its protagonist was an adulterous woman who married the man with whom she had cheated on her first husband, with grave consequences. Tragically, Emmeline and the rest of Brunton's unfurling creative genius were cut short. Marian Alexander had struggled for years to start a family, and their joy at falling pregnant turned to despair when in late December 1818, Mary delivered a stillborn son. 2 weeks later, she succumbed to a fever and died. She was 40 years old. Mary Brunton is buried alongside many other significant Edinburgh writers in the Canongate Kirkyard, with the epitaph, "Authoress of Self-Control, etc." Edinburgh's cultural scene mourned this rising star who had found so much acclaim and was just getting started. Lengthy obituaries appeared in the city papers, and prominent figures in the literary scene paid her tribute. And supportive past the very end, in 1819, the year after Mary's death, Alexander published her unfinished fragments of Emmeline alongside a tender, detailed biography of his late wife.
"It has been for 20 years my happiness to watch the workings of that noble mind, my chief usefulness to aid its progress, however feebly. Nothing is more soothing to me than to dwell on the remembrance of her. Nothing more dear to me than to diffuse the benefit of her example. I am persuaded that in all which she had done, she was only trying her strength, and that if her life had been prolonged, the standard of female intellect might have been heightened, and the character of English literature might have been embellished by her labours."
Today, we remember Mary Brunton as a strong voice in early 19th century literature, whose championing of women's intellectual, creative, and religious pursuits set a powerful example for generations to follow. In 2022, Historic Environment Scotland installed a plaque to commemorate her life and work at 35 Albany Street, the building in Newtown where Mary and Alexander lived in the early 1800s. It is our hope that Mary Brunton will be remembered with the same veneration as Jane Austen is today for her valuable, pioneering contributions to UK literature. Her ardor for life, religious devotion, and creativity made her one of Scotland's greatest literary stars. That's all for this episode of Building Stories. For more episodes, and to learn more about the ongoing effort to make historically significant women more visible in Edinburgh, please visit www.cityofliterature.com. This podcast is produced by I Am Loud Productions. It was commissioned by Edinburgh City of Literature and Historic Environment Scotland. Thank you so much for listening.